Academically, she teaches at two universities in the area of public health, and her passion is the application of empirical science to prevention practices affecting positive social change, most recently violence prevention. And she's going to speak with us today about factors influencing the application of research to practice in family violence, the importance to low-income women in studies. Thank you very much.
Thank you. As she mentioned, my name is Dr. Graff. I've been doing work in this area for probably about 14 years. In the beginning, I worked in human service for a very long time, and most primarily in the area of low-income women and children. And as I continued my academic career, I did a great deal of research in this area and found a lot of surprising information that really touched my heart, and completed a doctoral dissertation, which was conferred last year, and this is an expansion of some of that work. I do not have any personal or financial relationships to disclose that are related to this work, other than that the basis for it was my doctoral dissertation. There are three objectives that I want to be able to focus on during the presentation. The first is that I want to describe for you some of the impact to family violence on low-income women and children as a unique situation, identify some factors that influence the application of research to practice among family violence prevention workers that was completed as part of the doctoral dissertation that I completed, as well as some action steps that we've put together to take for further study in increasing the application of research to practice specifically targeting low-income women and children populations and communities. It's generally accepted that family violence is a serious public health problem. There's very little argument in the academic community that this is a situation that has plagued us for many decades. There are trends and patterns and enough data to be able to show that violence is a problem in our communities. However, the reality is that there is a disparity for individuals who are living in low-income populations, and the reality is, while violence trespasses all socioeconomic statuses, the variables that increase the level of violence for individuals are disparate among low-income women and children. When we look at the level of reporting and really trying to understand the trends and patterns, the problem is there's variance in the definition of violence. When you look at a term like family violence, you may be talking about child abuse, domestic violence, intimate partner violence, intimate sexual assault, intimate relational violence. When you look at the literature, the variance in the definition of violence is so broad, it makes it very difficult to determine what types of violence are occurring. The other issue is underreporting. There's a lot of fear, there's a lot of stigma associated with abuse, and so it's something that's often underreported. And comorbidity. The reality is, when you look at issues of witnessing domestic violence, experiencing violence as a child yourself, or in a situation where you're in a community filled with violence, a lot of the issues that result from this are expound and compound the issues that are there. So the reality is it's very hard to tease out the variables that are related specifically to the occurrence of the abuse that's happening inside the home. Understanding the true breadth and depth of the social problem is something that the academic community has been trying to tackle for the last several decades. However, there is a push recently to provide more evidence-based violence prevention in this area. For the particular doctoral study that I did, the term family violence, because of the variance in definition, I think that it's important to clarify that, was an umbrella term that was used to encompass all forms of interpersonal violence. And that's something that I define as violence between family members, between intimate partners, or by a caregiver, whoever that caregiver may be. It includes emotional, mental, verbal, physical, and economical violence, which is something that we often see with elder abuse. It's accepted that the effects are individual and societal. Emotional, mental development, physical development are all affected by abusive acts, as well as later in life, work productivity, lost wages, and things that affect us on a societal level. Again, these are not things that are contested by the academic community as existing. We understand and accept that they exist. The question at this point is, how do we take that acceptance and turn it into prevention that will create real change? There are disparities among low-income families. The known predictors of violence are disproportionate among low-income women and children and areas of communities, and those include disorganized parenting, family stress and substance abuse, a demonstrated history or past, community violence, lack of education and resources. These are all known variables that contribute to violence. And they are those particular variables are disparate among low-income women and children. And so the question has to be, does this mean that low-income women and children experience more violence? And that is not something that's been studied to date. UNICEF says that 50% of the world's children are documented as living in poverty. So if we can take some of this research and put it together and say that predictors of violence are disparate among low-income women and children, and 50% of children are living in poverty, that's a very large population of at-risk individuals that will likely experience violence in some form or another in their lifetime. That drives the idea that a focus needs to be more driven on prevention rather than simply intervention, and intervention is where we've been at for the last several decades. Chandran, in 2011, stated that poverty and violence is an understudied topic and presented a framework and suggested four areas of improvement. They were better national surveillance, and he was speaking about our country in the United States, improved intervention research that was based on evaluation. He wanted to see programs that are currently existing be better evaluated. The fourth was family-based legislation and policy, and the fourth was improved partnership and collaboration. When I look at my own doctoral work, and I look at this study, one of the things that I find missing from this framework is that evaluation is not sufficient. There is justification and a great deal of research that recently has come out in the last decade that has shown that there is a significant gap between the research that's being done and the type of work that's being done on the front lines to prevent violence. That gap shows that evaluation of program is not sufficient because there is a base of evaluation literature that's been growing after the last decade. The problem is it's not being applied. And if that application is missing, then all the research in the world, all evaluation and legislation and policy, if it's not translating into real life applied intervention practices, then we're kind of missing the boat. So the work that I did really spoke to, it supported Chandran's framework, but it also said that there's something missing and we need to go a step further. The reality is that good intentions are not enough. When we look at violence prevention over the last 30 or 40 years, frequently people say that violence is increasing, and that's actually not a fact. When you look at the rates, the reality is across the board, violence rates have decreased and now stabilized over the last decade. However, when we talk about 794,000 substantiated cases of child abuse, that means that they're actually documented to be true, that 22% of intimate partners abuse their spouse, and that there are over a million, the prevalence of elder abuse is over a million cases as of 2005, stabilization is not acceptable. The reality is that we need to actually reduce these rates, and there has been a decline in a pressure for evaluating these programs because of pushback from the front line. And the reality is a lot of times they don't understand the research or there are barriers for them to be able to implement what they have available. So what I looked at is what's actually being done, and this is an evaluation of the evaluation literature. And when we look at that, it shows that there's a need for evidence-based practice and prevention, there's a need for empirical evaluation, application of research, and evaluation of existing programs, and that is being done. The reality is that there is program failure. When you look at some of these programs, they're not having the intended effects, or they're not having them meeting the benchmarks they need to be meeting. There are some of the programs that have been implemented that actually have had unintended negative effects, where they've gone in to do domestic violence intervention and have actually caused more problems than they did render help. And the effective use of resources, we live in an economic time where funding is being cut and cut and cut. So the reality is we have to get better at using the resources that we have left to be available to us. So the research that I did really looked at this as from understanding, now that we've accepted that this is a social problem, that's established, we need to be able to drive a better prevention framework. The research that I did an in-depth qualitative research study that applied the principles of force field analysis and the public health model using in-depth interview measures that examined variables that positively and negatively impacted the process of applying research to practice. So if we go back to the framework that Chandran presented and say that application of research to practice is the piece that's missing from that framework, what I wanted to understand is what are the factors that drive that process and what are the factors that hinder that process? Because if we can influence those factors, then we can increase the application of research to frontline work. The three questions following a force field analysis were very simply, what are the factors? What are the hindering and facilitating factors? From a sample of family violence prevention workers, what are the most important and common factors? So we needed to actually rate and find out what influences them the most and what influences the majority. And then we needed to go back for the third question and find out what's actually amenable to change. Because the reality is, while there may be factors that influence large numbers of frontline workers, we may not be able, it may not be feasible to change that factor. The key results to these, and there were many results that came out of this study. This was a two-year study, and I'm happy to give you the citation for the full dissertation. But this specifically relates to information that impacts the low-income population. 76% to 92% of all participants, and this is across several factors that were identified, reported that a lack of resources was their significant barrier. So what the family violence prevention workers were telling us is that we don't have the time, access, or money to get the research. That's a problem. How do we fix it? The Porcelain analysis allows us to be able to say if that barrier has the biggest influence on decreasing research to practice, and then we go further and say we understand there's a disparity in resources for low-income women and children. We now have a situation where we've compounded an at-risk population with a lack of resources, and the lack of resources is driving the failure to apply empirical science and best practices. How do you change that? It seems almost impossible. While the participants highlighted that a lack of funding was an insurmountable barrier, the reality of a forced-fit analysis allows us to look at factors other than just lack of funding to almost let us go around the problem. While we can't just start handing out larger grant monies, are there ways to be able to create research that's more affordable and accessible to individuals? There's a lot of coalitions that are coming into practice now that could be used to drive a lot of the research dissemination that's available. So from this, we created some action plans for next steps. Again, these are only the action plans that are related specifically to low-income women and children. The first was an acceptance that as an academic society and a field of violence prevention, that the current economical climate is not an acceptable excuse to be able to dictate a lack of rigor for our programs. There are other ways other than increasing funding to be able to improve the evaluation techniques and the programs that we offer on the front line. The second is that agencies have to be taught how to use the resources that they do have more effectively and more efficiently. We do have resources, and a lot of them are wasted because people just don't understand what's working and what's not. A lot of the research, evaluation research being done is not reaching the people who are implementing these programs. The third was a focus on collaboration and condensing some of the resources. When you look at a lot of violence prevention, it's mostly a grassroots effort. And a lot of the individuals working in this situation do not have a lot of contact with other agencies who are doing the exact same work they are. And these individuals can definitely inform each other on what's working for their program and what's not working for their program and create a better sound, evidence-based literature that can be disseminated. The fourth was rewarding evidence-based results based on grant funding and foundational awards. There is grant money out there, and there are foundational awards out there. And there is a drive for outcome-based research. And being able to tie some of those benchmarks to grant monies will ensure that agencies are meeting some of those standards. Then is a focus on inexpensive resources. Many academics create research that has a 48-session intervention program that's not realistic for someone who's working in domestic violence shelter or a program to be able to implement. They need to be core pieces that can be implemented easily and inexpensively. And a lot of that can be broken down. Finally, is providing access to inexpensive cost-benefit analysis tools. The forceful analysis is one of the things I've talked about a lot the last 4 days. It's an extremely inexpensive research framework that will allow anybody to go into their organization and figure out what's working from the perspective of the front line. The action items that we're looking at, when I did research, I found that Australia recently passed the Family Violence Protection Act of 2008. Now, obviously, this is not in the U.S., so this was in Australia. But the act created legal definitions and enforceable laws that allowed individuals to be able to regard the types of violence among family members as a legal definition. Everybody's now using the same definition. It also dictated and required that interventions, not only that family violence efforts, every agency that wanted funding was allowed to do intervention, but also had to provide some form of prevention service, at least 20%. And it allocated $35.1 billion in their government budget that was specific to reducing family violence. This was in 2008. Keep in mind economic climate in 2008 and $35 billion, because they recognized the negative outcomes that are associated with family violence and the impact that that type of prevention might be able to have. I believe that as a nation, if we can adopt similar types of standards and push for those types of standards, while we may not create the exact same act, we certainly would move towards a more unified evaluation front. The second thing is understanding some of the ecological and economical effects of this research. To be able to say that all populations are generalized is obviously not a reality, but there are some things that we can do on an intervention level that would affect all peoples. However, if we understand that there are significant disparities among low-income women and children, we have to create intervention and prevention programs that are evidence-based, that target those populations, and not just family violence, but the root causes of some of that, such as disorganized parenting that we had talked about earlier. There are, as I said, 2.5 years plus another year since of research that's gone into this. I'm more than happy to talk to you a little bit more about a lot of the different research that's available. If you email me, I will send you a copy of the references as well as a link to the full dissertation study, and I'm open to any questions that you have afterwards. My takeaway for you from this is that the reality is that we are moving into a new phase, I hope, certainly my own personal drive, in violence prevention. Not just accepting and understanding and looking at the trends and the patterns, but how do we move from a world of intervention to a world of prevention and increase the focus on decreasing the rates of this happening in the first place rather than trying to negate the effects of it afterwards. Thanks for your time.